shows like Dancing with the Stars and So You Think You Can Dance have given the general public a look at what ballroom dancers have known for years. Dancing is not just an art form. Sometimes it's a matter of life and death with fabulous sequined outfits.
Today we're joined by six-time national Ukrainian ballroom champion Artem Lazarev, who came all the way from the coastal town of Odessa on the Black Sea to be a fierce and fabulous singer and dancer here in Chicago.
Listen as Artem shares with us his amazing stories of living in Russia during Putin's rise to power, how to perform masculinity in dancing to survive, and the special passion he shared with his dance partners.
Plus, Russian men are going gay for Putin by posting shirtless photos of themselves online.
Clay Aiken says, "I'm a fucking dumbass for supporting Trump."
And Bonnie Tyler says she'll sing Total Eclipse of the Heart during the solar eclipse while on a cruise.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Did you know that rainbows come from unicorns? Well, they do. They really, really do. And I've got just the t-shirt to prove it. Get yours today at feastoffun.com/store.
Nothing I can say. Total eclipse of the heart. Mark, how you
doing? Yes, I'm here. I'm good.
Can you hear this?
Yeah, I hear your breath.
Good. Ooh, what the hell is that sound? Okay.
Is a helicopter outside? What is that?
It was a truck. Our guest today is six-time national Ukrainian ballroom dancing champion, Artem Lazarev, who came all the way from the coastal town of Odessa in the Black Sea in the Ukraine to be a fierce and fabulous singer-dancer-performer here in Chicago. On Thursday, August 31st, Artem will be performing a collection of his favorite Broadway standards at Davenport's Piano Bar in Chicago. Welcome to Feast of Fun, Artem.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited about this meeting and about everything what's happened with me last 2.5 years. So
it's you've been busy the last 2.5 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's crazy. It's a lot of changes. Changes in life, in feelings, and vision for life. It's cool.
Because you've been here in the United States now for 2.5 years.
Almost 3 years. It's actually, yeah. I come in March, so it will be in March already 3 years. I actually come first to United States, to New York, and I stay there for a couple months. And then I was invited to some girl, my friend from Facebook. She invited me to be a dance instructor in Chicago. Okay. I mean, it's not in Chicago, in the suburb, but it's still Chicagoland area. And I decided to make a shot and just try to come and we'll see what's going on. So, and I stayed here, and couple months later, I just met my husband in a restaurant. It was really romantic atmosphere. And
what kind of restaurant?
It's a restaurant named Firkin. I don't know just if you guys know
that. Food? Is that Italian?
I don't know.
It's Russian?
No, it's American food. It's really like
a burger dive.
It's kind of, yeah. So it was interesting.
Would you like some extra bacon on your burger? I said, I'll take two.
No, that was fun because I'm sitting close to him and I didn't know him at all.
Yeah.
Just I start singing. That's what I'm doing actually every day during my life. And he turned around and asked me, like, are you a singer? Like, I'm a dancer. Like, and we started a conversation. So he told me about his life, that he involved in theater. And we find some things in common
ground.
Yeah. So that's how we start communicate to each other.
Now, was he your first boyfriend?
No. No.
So you come from the Black Sea, the coastal of the Black Sea. I love saying that, but actually the Black Sea is a beautiful, Odessa is a beautiful town in the Ukraine.
Yeah, it's very amazing atmosphere, people really nice, it's really warm, and it's really good. You just go back there and you kind of like recharge yourself with this air.
So it's like the Mediterranean. It's a warm. Is it a temperate? What kind of a climate is it?
Yeah, it's Mediterranean. Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
That's why you have this fabulous tan.
No, tanning, I'm just doing here already.
Now, we met you. We were hanging out at Starbucks, much mm-hmm. like the wrestler Eye Candy Elliot. Mark and I were sitting out just with my sister, just mm-hmm. having a lovely cup of coffee, enjoying the Chicago summer. And I was like, Mark, go inside. There's a really hot guy putting up posters
no way.
With his own face on it. And I was like, "This, you know," and Mark ran inside and was like, it's
well, on. I was going inside to order coffee anyway.
Yes. A second cup.
And so and then I went and I looked at the poster and then I looked at you and you said, hi. And I was just like, hi. Well, I said, "What? Tell me about your show." And you did. And so I said, hey, come out and meet my husband. And we came out and my sister-in-law was there. And you talked to us about your show. But you know what's funny though is like I ran into Eye Candy Elliot at the coffee shop and he goes, oh yeah, who's coming on your guest? Who's coming on? I told him, oh yeah, a 6-time ballroom champion. He's like, oh, where'd you meet? And I'm like,
coffee shop.
At the coffee shop, just like we met you. And he's just like, oh, I see how it is.
So you come from the Black Sea, mm-hmm. the Black Sea, and you come here to Chicago and you've been dancing all around Europe. It's kind of a very common thing. I'm reading your Eartha Kitt's biography. She sort of expanded her vistas in life by getting signed with the Catherine Dunham Dance Company. And for you, that's very similar to Eartha Kitt's story, is that you sort of move far beyond your small little town in Odessa in the Ukraine to explore the world as a dancer.
Yeah, that's a big, big, big jump. And I can say really huge thanks to my mom, because she technically pushed me to this stuff. She tried to push me when I was 8, and she told me, like, let's go start ballroom dancing. And like, I don't want, it's not mine, I don't want to do this. And when I become 12...
Why did you not want to do it as a kid?
You know, it's in Russian, we have like a, if you say ballet dancer and ballroom dancer, it sounds really familiar, like similar. And that's why for me, the ballroom dancer, it sounds like ballet dancer, and I didn't like it ballet to dance with this skirts and
a tutu.
yeah.
You wanted to be a ninja,
not ninja, but
What did you want to be when you grew up as a kid?
Oh my God, it's crazy because I don't remember actually.
Okay,
we all saying usually like we want to be like a spaceman, like in a spaceship, flying in a spaceship,
cosmonaut.
Yeah, cosmonaut. So.
You wanted to be a double agent Russian spy.
No.
Posing as a dance instructor in the United States.
No. I know the only thing that I really wanted always, because my mom and my dad, my old parents, gave me a lot of love, and I just really wanted to spread the love in the way of energy, to care, to tell, to sing, to dance, and through the move, through the voice, kind of delivering some message that's sometimes touching people inside, and it's touching different areas of every different person. Yeah, so it's... Mm. And later, it's funny, because later when I start singing in karaoke bars with my friends, some people from the side just come like, oh my God, and she's standing in front of me and crying, like, what are you crying? Like, I'm like, oh, you touched me so hard here in my own moments. Like,
yeah,
I'm so glad and so happy for you. That's amazing. That's how I just feel. And then I start dancing. I actually come to my mom at 12 and I said, Mom, I want to start dancing. And she said, like, oh, it's late. I'm like, Mom, no, it's not late.
It's never
it's exactly
too late.
Time when I just really understand and aware about mm-hmm. what I'm doing and what I want to do. So it's kind of crazy. But
and so you immediately went into ballroom dancing, or was it a different type of dancing?
No, I strictly come to the ballroom dancing, and year later I become a Ukrainian national champion, which is
after
like
1 year.
After 1 year.
How old were you? 13?
I started at 12. I danced 1 year with one girl, and then 13 I started to dance with another girl. And actually 2 years, sorry, just yeah, so after 1 year dancing with my second partner, we become Ukrainian national champions.
Was she excited?
I think so. She was a little bit angry because I always forgetting my routines during the dance competition.
So you're caught in the moment.
Kind of in the moment, yeah. And my teacher always changing my routines, always like 10 days or 7 days before the competition. So like, oh, I'm forgetting, I don't remember, what the next. And she always angry with me
Oh, she was.
She was angry with
me. Even though you were winning these titles.
It's already later.
Oh, okay. So in the first, because I think that may have been your success, right? Is that you really put yourself in the moment, whereas other ballroom dancers are very analytical. They're very caught up in the memorization of these very precise movements.
Yeah.
And they don't really dance with passion. The Black Sea passion.
That's true. Absolutely. I'm all about it. You need to catch the moment and be in the moment when you dancing, when you loving, when you, I don't know, when you flying around. Just be in the moment. It's very important.
I'll say. And so how did you find your partners initially? Was this something your dance instructor paired you off in order to compete? Or was this like an organic process, like you put an ad on Craigslist in the Ukraine?
It's actually much more interesting and much more fun because first my dance partner, when I come to my first dance studio, she come at the same time with me. So technically we didn't know each other. So she come at the same time with me and
she was taking classes at the same time.
No, she just come to find a new studio for herself. And the teacher tell like, oh, would you like to try together to do tryouts? And like, yeah, sure, let's do that. And after this, we start dancing together. And we danced probably like 1 year and a half. So.
And you fell in love with a lot of your female dance partners.
Not all, but I really in love with some kind of energy because I love to feel the spiritual stuff energy of the people. And it makes me feel really cool if I find the person who is on the same wave, on the same vibe, on the same, like, it's fantastic. It's phenomenal.
Does it make the dancing better?
Or
does
absolutely.
It, yeah?
Yeah.
Because you have that connection?
Yeah.
With your husband,
and it's not a sexual
Bob?
Connection. It's just a connection, your soul. So you can find, like, your soulmate, and you're just like, wow, we can fly. We can just change the world.
Do you think that in the ballroom world, is that a pretty common thing for people that dance together to be also be romantically involved?
Not always. But yeah, there is a situations when the people through the process, they just start to know each other better. They're spending like 24 hours together on the floor.
I saw that in a documentary called Dirty Dancing.
It's, I think it's a little bit different.
Yeah, it was basically the same plot, right? It's like you were the dance instructor or you were dancing with the young ingenue who is daddy's little girl and you took her into a magical new world and you taught her how to find her groove and nobody puts baby in the corner and finally you had the time of your life.
Yeah.
Like, and you danced like you never danced before.
It's kind of true. I agree with you. Absolutely.
And so does your husband, Bob, who's involved in the creative arts, do you guys dance together? Or he's like, I can't do it. Or
yeah, actually, it was really cool, fun situations when we go to the Walgreens. And I just like, okay, let's go dance. It was a funny music and almost nobody around. I'm like, okay, let's go dance. And we started dancing together. It was really fun. Couple moments like this.
What's your favorite? Like, are you more of a flamenco guy? Or are you a salsa, merengue, cha-cha-cha?
Foxtrot, tango, waltz.
I think it depends from the mood, from my mood and my husband, if we just together, I kind of like catching the vibe, what he have at this moment. So, and sometimes it's really passion mood when you just grab and just go and like tango and just like passion, like wah, wah. And some of like really gentle, very touch, very like, I don't know, like cuddle stuff. So you can just move slightly and it's defense form.
The tango is originally supposed to be a dance between two men. It was like a battle dance, and it eventually evolved to become this like romantic ballroom dance standard. But initially, it was supposed to be sort of homoerotic.
But it's the funny part. So the tango was a Latin American dance for a long time.
From Argentina.
Yeah. So the Argentinian tango and the tango, they kind of have a difference, but they still, it's kind of different type of technique of way how you lead the partner. So it's a little bit different. But the tango, not Argentinian, just simple tango.
The international tango.
Yeah, international. It was Latin dance before. And then later it starts to be like a program with the waltz, with the Venice waltz.
Well, sort of like that movie. I know it sounds really trivial, but Dirty Dancing and La Lambada sort of popularize Latin American dance styles into the mainstream, into ballroom dancing as well. Like, who knew Jennifer Grey would have and Patrick Swayze would have so much of an influence?
What attracted you to the ballroom dancing? Was the competition part? Was that much of the attraction?
You know, just first thing that has really attracted me so much, it was probably weird for now, but I was in this period in the theater. It's like a
theatrical
kids circle, I don't know, just place where they invite the girl. She was with long legs, with big boobs, very curly hair. And I was actually was really in love with her energy, the way how she care about how I'm learning things, how I memorize things. And it was like we like a give feedback to each other. So the energy I gave her, she gave me. So it was that connection. And I was in love with the dancing, how she moved in her move. And it was when I was exactly 12, and I talked to my mom, I want to do that.
How much do you feel as though the competition is the big part of it, though?
Agree. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because when you're dancing for yourself, it's one thing. When you go on a competition floor, it's adrenaline, judges, plus somebody who dance around you also, and you see like, oh, he's better. I want to be better. So you're kicking yourself. It's kind of competitive. Very competitive feeling inside.
What's the key to winning something like that?
I believe it's a lot of work, even if you are very talented, but you need to work really hard and to put your talent on hardworking process on the base, what you're creating and doing like hours and hours and hours, training the same move, the same body shape, head shake, whatever you do. And you put it when you already automatically body moving, you put the talent, emotions, feelings into this. That's probably the key to be a winner and be the best on the dance floor.
Now, one theory, dance theory that I have that I always bestow upon a lot of drag queens, and I want you to weigh on this, is that dance ultimately is about making circles with your body. Right? So you're doing that circle with your arms, you're doing circles with your hips.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. It could be head, it could be shoulders, it could be hips, it could be arm, wrist. All this funny part that everything when you're doing like a curving lines, which is, I can tell you right now, guys, about like the boy and the girl. Yes.
Yeah?
So
yeah.
What does boy see in the girl? Very attractive. The shapes, the boobs, the booty, the shoulders. When she's doing like very something like shy, that's the curving lines of the body. It's actually attracting in the men's too. The man to another man. It's just like a shape of the body also. It's kind of, it's like,
but there's
in the
a masculine language to dance as well, right?
True.
It's like it's what would you just like, in an essence, to butch it up as a dancer, what does that mean to you?
I don't understand the question.
How do you know, because we were talking about this and your experience for a lot of gay men living in Eastern Europe and in Russia. You lived in Moscow for 10 years. And you sort of saw Moscow sort of devolve into this sort of human rights crisis. We'll get to that in a minute, but you described that process as if it was performative, that you had to play this masculine character that wasn't true to who you are.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was theatrical in a sense in order to survive as a gay man or as a bisexual man.
It sometimes is weird because I saw some situations in the subway when the person just sit and just do not touch anybody, do not do anything.
Yeah.
He just in his fashion hat with, I don't know, with bag, I don't know, from Dolce & Gabbana. And he just wearing nice pants and he just really fashion, but he do not doing anything to make people angry about it. But some people really,
to challenge their perceptions of who he is or their gender and what a man is supposed to behave like.
I don't know, just actually.
And so as a dancer, like, because I'm interested in hearing your perspective as a dancer and talking about masculinity. Like, when you're sort of this male lead and you're dancing with a female partner, there's, you know, as gay men or as people who are gender fluid or sexuality fluid like yourself, it's we don't really see things as black and white, male or female. We're like, if we like this dance move, we're going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and if we like glitter, we'll put on some glitter, right? But in terms of ballroom dancing, there's a very formal approach to these partners, these relationships.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to hear you, what in essence is masculine when you're dancing, say, a tango or a cha-cha-cha or Latin dance? Or
I believe it's more about, like, if you're very sharp, mm-hmm. if you're very, like, you have a strength, you stretch your arms really fast. You're not making it, like, soft and fluent, like a girl, so you move mm-hmm. more fluently. The man is more about, like, strength. He explode. He stand on the leg. He
definitive.
Put this arm to the side. He opened the position. He just go there. Mm-hmm. He turn there. So it's more sharp or more... More, yeah.
Precise.
More, yeah.
Yeah, because I'm noticing, and I wish we could be showing this
it should be on video. He's moving in this.
Your motion is really interesting, the way your body language mm-hmm. changed right now when you were describing all this. Mm-hmm. It was very, you know, and it's interesting because I'm as a drag queen myself, and as somebody who really thinks a lot about gender and performance, it's interesting to hear somebody like yourself who spends a lot of time thinking about how to fulfill that masculine expectation as a competitive ballroom dancing champion.
You mean on the floor and competitive
floor? Yeah, yeah. Because it's like if you were too feminine, they would probably take points off of that, I would imagine.
I cannot say that they will take a points, yeah. But even compare with somebody who will be the same level mm-hmm. dancing, but will be more masculine with the lines, with the straight positions, with more like a fundamental... what he doing, his decision. So he probably win. And about myself, so I actually hear it a lot of times when I just start my dancing career from different top teachers from Europe. They tell, oh, Artem, you look feminine. You need to do something with that. It's like, okay, tell me, teach me. I'm ready. I'm open mm-hmm. mind. I'm ready to learn stuff. I want to learn from you and take some good stuff.
And so they said, show more strength, have cleaner lines,
yeah,
and
yeah.
more explosive moves.
Yeah, yeah.
But and not be so flouncy,
so
fluid, soft and
gentle, fluid. Yeah, yeah. Okay. yeah.
So really just kind of move hard.
More, yeah.
Okay.
But it's interesting because when I'm working with people about lifting weights, mm-hmm. I always tell people fluidity is actually really good because it protects your joints. Mm-hmm. It's not, you're less prone to injury, you know, this.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sorry, we'll make a video because it's impossible to describe what we're doing here in language.
And funny, I can tell you about the box. I just took some classes in the box in Russia. Back
boxing.
In, boxing,
like,
yeah.
Punching,
like boxing,
competitive.
Punching.
Yeah.
I didn't compete with anybody, but I trained with my teacher. He showed me some elements. And he told me you should be really flexible, and it's really good that you're a dancer, mm-hmm, that you have sure. flexibility so you can move, you can rotate your joints, you can rotate your body, and this is really helpful to do a good boxing. Mm-hmm. And I was shocked because I thought, like, oh, boxing, it's like more about like hard body, like you just make your body stiff and like you need to be like very hard. And it's not. It's absurd. You should be flexible.
You got to sting like a butterfly. No, sting like a move like a float like a butterfly and sting like
remember
a bee.
Remember things yeah. like young Muhammad Ali, not old Muhammad yes. Ali. So you lived in Moscow from 2004 to 2010. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tell me what you observed in the country as it changed through those years. There, I'm really fascinated, and people have this conspiracy theory that Putin, much like Paul McCartney, died early in their career and was replaced by a clone or a lookalike.
Actually, I'm not a big politic person. I'm more about art, and I love mm-hmm. about peace, love, and spreading these emotions. But a couple of days ago, I saw the TV show. Somebody from the Facebook actually gave me a link about that they replaced Putin in 2006 because he died from the cancer of his spine. And then they start giving more examples, like the eyes bigger on this person mm-hmm. than the real one, the mouse, there's a lot of things. And plus they divorce specifically. So Putin divorced with his wife because she will start living with another person.
Oh, so he divorced his wife at the time.
So she will
so
start
she
talking.
Wouldn't call out on it.
Yeah, yeah, so she will start talking about, and they don't need this stuff. So I don't know just actually what's going on there.
Do you think that's likely
crazy.
To happen?
I don't know. It feels like a little bit, because when I lived in 2004, the different vibe was. before. Mm-hmm. So closer to 2010, it's kind of the situation in this in the city, in the Moscow, changed. People a little bit more angry, people more, you know, I don't know just how to describe it. I'm like,
big leaders, in politics. Leaders have often had, like, you know, body doubles. They say Saddam Hussein had like 8 body doubles, people that kind of resembled him.
Yeah, he had like 4 or 5.
I think Trump has a bloated corpse of a dead pig that's usually used to confuse people. Him. Yeah. But in terms, I'm really interested in hearing this because it seems like, you know, for a lot of Russian people, you know, people generally are good and have ethics. And, you know, what's been happening in Russia is mirroring what's happening in the United States. And we're seeing a lot of minorities being targeted to allow corrupt politicians get away with their bad behavior. So it's like, politicians sort of say, well, I'm protecting you from these evil gays, and that's why I'm able to steal money to enrich myself. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, people's hardwired sense of justice and what's morality gets pulled into question with their political alliances. And so it's interesting in hearing this idea that, like, Putin isn't really Putin, and the good Putin died, and he's been replaced by this evil Putin, and that's why we're starting to see all this, like, awful things happen.
Yeah, I can tell, like, I don't know him personally, but the feeling that he did a lot of great changes for country. Mm-hmm. In the period when I was there, like, I come to Russia in 2004, and it was really, feels like he's doing a lot of good stuff for people. And I don't know him, but this is a vibe that I see on the TV, how he's spending time with the family, how he's spending time with the people, talking to them, traveling in a place where they have some troubles or catastrophic some place, like, I don't know, weather condition, destroy, like, all. And he goes there and he's talking to people. But after, again, like I told
after
you,
after 2006,
closer to 2008, 9, 10.
Sure.
I never see it on the TV that he would have a communication with the people, with family, how he just like this.
He might be a robot.
Maybe Trump planted him.
Yeah, that's the other way around. Well, and so, yeah, I think it's interesting because I don't think it's likely that any, you know, political leader has been replaced with a
if anybody's going to do it, it's Russian oligarchs, though.
Maybe.
You know, they could just totally prop him up.
You think that they're capable of finding, like, a lookalike? Like,
he looked like Dolby from Hogwarts. So, yeah, easy enough, right?
Well, right now, a lot of Russians are feeling under attack. They're feeling triggered because of the events that are unfolding, especially this week in the United States with Charleston. So to summarize it really fast, there's a lot of ties. President Trump and the Republican Party, the Republican Party throughout the 80s very much painted a picture of Russia as the very sinister enemy that should be feared. And all of a sudden, overnight, it seems like Republicans and conservatives fell in love with the fact that Russia was really supporting oligarchs. Basically, oligarchs are the mob, but with a lot more money.
Well, and a lot of our politicians are funded. They're getting millions and millions of dollars from these Russian oligarchs, trying to remove these restrictions that we have on the trade with Russians, because a lot of their money they feel is like ill-gotten.
Sure.
And so they're trying to keep that money out of the United States.
And so Russians are feeling sort of like at a crossroads again, seeing it's like, this is not the country I want. This is not what I believe in. So some people, when they're feeling under attack, they double down as a normal human reaction, instead of like saying, you know, like Clay Aiken is saying, you know, I'm a fucking dumbass. That's what he actually said for supporting Trump.
Well, he said he always thought Trump would be a dumpster fire of a president, but he didn't think Trump was racist.
Sure.
You know, and so now he's just like, it's pretty clear that Donald Trump is racist.
So a lot of Russian men are on their social media are posting pictures of themselves shirtless in support of Putin. So with the two rules,
show me some of these photos,
and some of them are, I gotta say, you know, this is pretty sexy. So they can't be flexing, they can't be photoshopped, and they can't have a pump after the workout. They have to be relaxed to show how sexy Russian men really are. So, okay. You know, Artem, if you really want to support Russia right now, you might want to take your shirt off.
I'm Googling this now to see what comes up.
It's pretty hot, I got to tell you. You know, and it's nice to see something like a little bit trivial and a bit silly and sexy and just light of all this sadness and darkness.
Is it the hashtag Putin shirtless challenge? Is that what it is?
I think so. Yeah, that's what it is. So we could do that too, but I don't know. Part of me is like, all my social media has me shirtless. So well, how would you know?
Just find them on Instagram.
I want to do a support to all the LGBT people who are living in Russia, who, you know, at least here in the United States, we have some light at the end of the tunnel. We know that Trump is going to eventually be ousted. Mm-hmm. And we're right now living in a very terrifying moment in our history because we have been taken over by these racist monsters, right wingers. And it's horrifying. You know, our president is taking the sides with the Nazis, with American right wing white supremacists who are anti-Jewish,
anti-gay,
racist, the old school, you know, movie, like a movie villain from the 1950s. Our president is aligning himself with all that stuff. And it's terrifying. And, you know, in a lot of ways, the country right now is holding its breath until that happens.
Yeah. And some people are being smart about it. You know, the city of Baltimore just removed all of the Confederate statues. There were four of them. They did it overnight so that people wouldn't even notice it happening. And the mayor cited it was we did it for public safety because what we've seen, what's happened in these other cities, people tearing down statues, somebody could get hurt. And then, of course, what happened in Charlottesville.
Now, Artem, you have a cabaret show, which right now doesn't have a title. It's just Artem Lazarev.
Yeah.
Live at Davenport's.
Yeah.
And you're going to be, you know, singing some songs to soothe our troubled nation. So you're going to be like sort of Rocky Balboa of cabaret, trying to unite the Russia and United States into a peace-loving, LGBT equality-loving world. What songs are you choosing to achieve this impossible task?
I actually choose a lot of different songs and from the different musicals, and I have one of my favorite songs is Impossible Dream.
Okay.
From The Man of La Mancha. It will be my closing.
To dream the impossible.
Yeah, yeah.
And why am I singing it? You should sing it. Can you give me just a little phrase?
Off the cuff. Sure, I just need to.
Just like your husband heard you singing at Chili's.
Just pretend we're in a restaurant.
Yeah, I'll have the shrimp scampi. What are you having, Mark?
I don't know. Tell me about this lobster bisque.
Okay, but I was going to have the lobster bisque.
You always order what I order.
No, you always order what
you order first.
Okay,
and
well,
you can't change your order after.
Why
you
don't
order.
We do this? I'll share. We'll both order. I'll order the lobster bisque.
Okay.
You have the hamburger, and then we'll split it in half and both get a little bit of each.
All right, well, I can do that.
Oh, guys, you're so sweet.
Wait, Mark. I hear somebody singing in the other booth.
Oh, my God. To dream the impossible dream, to fight the unbeatable foe, to bear with unbearable sorrow, to ride where the brave dare not go.
Yay!
Yay!
I feel like the windmills are being destroyed of hatred and oppression are being destroyed right now.
I feel like Dulcinea right now.
You guys asked me about what is the main idea of the show, and it's really, we did a couple months ago, we did the show with my husband for the kids, and
your husband Bob.
Yeah, yeah. So we decided to make some different songs from the different musicals and create the idea, and it was idea of love. So we put the main topic of love. It was different type of love. It was forbidden love, crazy love,
Slav.
Slav, what do you mean?
Well, it's you know, Slavic love is Slav.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and it was really crazy because when the kids start to bring their meaning of their love to the show. It was incredible. And just people just, I saw the reaction of people. I didn't expect that. So just like, I'm thinking about like, oh, you need to do perfect this move, add this energy. But then it's not only about to making perfect. It's about how you putting your feelings into the action and the song. That's why, in my opinion, what I will do in my show, I want to put as much as possible feeling of love to each song. As much care that my parents care about me when they grow me up and they give me this, I don't know, like they didn't ask anything back when they give this love, how to say that. I just like,
yeah, unconditional love.
Yeah, unconditional love. So it's very important things for me right now. That's why I want to deliver this message through my songs. And I hope.
How's your family reacting to the fact that you married an American man and you're living?
Oh, that was a really interesting moment because my mom actually didn't know anything about me. And when I called her and I tell her that stuff, she was kind of confusing. She probably knows something about me. I mean, like, she knows, she feels, because she's a mother. Sure. She definitely feel your kid. And but then I tell her, and I thought that she will not talk to me anymore. So it was kind of scary feeling. Yeah, but she called me by herself another day, and she started talking to me like we usually have a conversation. So for me, it was really important things.
Just like, Mom, at least I didn't marry a Donald Trump.
I believe she didn't know anything about him. You know,
I didn't have to pose naked in a catalog, making out with another woman. You know, so I'm basically describing Melania Trump. But, you know, Bob seems like a really good guy, and you guys have this really healthy relationship. You have common interests, so it's not just the sex, you know, the smoking hot sex that's bringing you guys together. It's also the fact that you guys have a passion for theater and music and dance.
It's a lot of passion between each other to everything what we do. Actually, we have lots of things what we're doing together, and it's really fantastic just spending time together, going to see Bob's friends, some show performances in the city. We're traveling also together a lot for this period of this year. And he's really fantastic guy. He's very supportive. He's very understanding what's going on, and sometimes giving really great advices to me when I'm in panic and like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. I'm just like, whole earth is like running away from me. And like, he's like, calm down. This is this. This is this. You're this. You're fabulous in this. You're talented. You're good. You're good. And he just kind of bringing me back to myself. So I just can feel that I'm stable.
Well, that's why I always tell people you can overcome a lot in life, and you've overcome a lot. You know that you've crossed a lot of vistas, and part of it is your unshakable spirit. You have this really joyful love for humanity and for art and for dancing and singing, and it comes across, and that's why we were attracted to you just instantly, just seeing you on the street, not just because you're a good looking guy, but also because of your perspective on what you do.
Thank you, guys. Really appreciate that.
Will you be singing Total Eclipse of the Heart? It's the hot new song of 2017. Bonnie Tyler, the Welsh singer who originated the song, originally was written for Meatloaf.
I think that was up for debate or something like that. Didn't they say
it was written by Meatloaf's writers for his album, and he chose not to record it. And then they were also working on it to be a part of a
vampire musical.
So Bonnie Tyler now, of course, you know, history is said and done, and Bonnie Tyler's probably biggest hit of her career is going to be singing it on a cruise ship during the solar eclipse on Monday.
Will she see the solar eclipse on the cruise ship?
Well, she'll be singing it up, you know, total eclipse of, hold on a second, heart. Oh my God. That's amazing. Turn around, bright eyes, but don't stare at the sun, because you're without the glasses. Otherwise, your eyes will look like the angel guy in the end of the video.
All burnt up.
Yeah, and people are like freaking out. They're saying that the eclipse is going to be a harbinger of doom. And I'm like, this is 2017, people. It's happened a few times.
And also too is like, how much worse can it get? than what we're going through right now. It's got to get better, right?
It's a cosmic reset button. I'm not I don't believe in astrology, but you know what? If I'll take a good omen if I see one, and to me it's like the idea of seeing the sun being devoured by the moon, right? Fusicated, and then being revealed again, brand new, is a reset button for humanity.
So, but you said you not believe in astrology, yeah?
I don't.
But do you believe in energy?
Well, I mean, energy is a very broad, vague term, but believing in it, I observe it. I can feel it. Yes, it's not something I need to believe in. It's something that you can is feel a fact.
It. You
sure.
can feel it something. So, and yeah. I think that the astrology, it's built a lot on the energy levels. Like, it depends, like, again, like when you was born, what time in, and the zodiac signs, in what zodiac signs you was
it's
born.
Just so, so it's kind subjective, of, Artem, though. It's a, like any type of astrologer. It's just as accurate as a fortune cookie. You know, I actually like fortune cookies better because at least you get a cookie.
Yeah, you have to taste them, right?
Yeah, I tried many times, and it's funny because it's really connected to my day. Mm-hmm. What the sign was in this piece of paper, it was really like 100%, like, boom, it's your day. And like, what?
Well, this, you know, you can interpret these things any way you want.
I agree. You know? Absolutely
and
agree.
That's key to what your success is that you look at things on an asset-based mindset. You know, you see a fortune cookie and you're like, wow, this is amazing. This has something to do with me. This makes my life better. You know,
positive attitude.
Yeah.
That you should technically have every single day. Because it's like I'm telling to my husband always, like, we're saying, like, you can find a lot of negative things during the day, and it's much easier to than to find something good and stay cool and in a good mood and be smiling and bring this, like.
But Eastern European culture is not very asset oriented. Mark, there's a joke that you make.
Oh, we had a girl. She was on the podcast. She was Russian. She was a Russian singer, and she said, "We have
very negative.
We have proverb in Russia. It said, life is like chicken coop ladder, short and shitty."
Oh my God.
You know, a ladder on a chicken coop is very short, right, and filled with shit. But you're very upbeat and very positive.
Again,
you know,
I can say I had a lot of shit in my life, and it doesn't mean that I should be like, you know, sometimes people want me to feel shit about stuff, but it's not my stuff. It's, for example, if the person telling me some bad stuff, and it's not about me sometimes. It's sometimes about this person that he or she, whatever, they have this bad experience with some previous people or whatever they have, and they're trying to bring it to you, and you decide it. You only can decide it. Do you want to take it and feel like it's yours, this all shit, yours, or you don't take it? And they're like, no, sorry, it's not mine. Like, it's for you.
That's your shit. It your belongs shit, to you. Pack it up in your suitcase when you leave.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody say shit. Now take that up. No, RuPaul says everybody say love, you know? And you know, sometimes those aphorisms, if they get you, you know, too legit to quit, you know, it's like, what gets you through the next hump? Mm-hmm. That's ultimately what it takes, you know?
Yeah.
And singing, you know, songs like Les Mis or Newsies. Tell me about these songs in your catalog before we wrap things up here. What does the Les Mis song mean to you? Or just the musical in general?
The song that I will sing, The Stars, it's just something like a miracle that's happening technically. That could happen technically to everyone in life, but as far you believe in that, so you can reach the star, you can take it, you can bring it to the earth, you can see the, like, sometimes people even do not watch up to the skies. They just watch, like, we're going to work, we're going to the shop, we need to do this, we need to do this, and like, okay, could you stop for a second and just put your head up and just see, oh my God, that's a miracle, stars.
Like Bonnie Tyler singing Total Eclipse of the Sun, heart, while there's a sun happening.
Yeah, so every song, and especially this song, is about, like, I don't know what exactly
what
ideas.
What about the Newsies? Tell me about the Beauty and the Beast, because this song was originally in the Beauty and the Beast musical when they expanded the film into the Broadway production. And then when they did the live adaptation, they took it out.
Oh, I really fell in love with the song because when my vocal...
What's the title of the song? Do you have it off of...
Oh, I think I have
it. Pull it out there, yeah. You're still learning this stuff.
I'm still learning.
You have like a week.
Yes. This is really kind of stressful.
Are you going to use the teleprompter?
You're going to be like Dolly Parton, be like, working 9 to 5. Are you sure that's how the song goes? I thought it was 10 to 6. What a way to make a living, sucking all those dicks. It's all no one fucks like Gaston. No one sucks like Gaston. No one sits on their dick, ass on their dick like Gaston. Something like that.
Oh my God. I'm red. My face is red.
That's how the song originally went. And they were like, this is too gay.
It's too sexual.
Howard Ashman, he was openly gay. He was one of the last works that he wrote before he passed.
I don't know.
He's the composer of the Beauty and the Beast. That's his name, Howard Ashman.
Okay.
But what's the name of the song that you wanted to sing?
The song is If I Can Love Her. So it's about the guy who just struggling about it.
He's the beast in all of us.
He's struggling because he's not be able to probably find this love with this beautiful girl that he just feel like, oh my God. I don't know, maybe it's
the girl that he's captivated. He's held captive in the cell, in a prison cell in his castle.
Yeah.
And he's forcing her to fall in love with him. Otherwise, he'll be a monster for the rest of his life.
It's true. It's kind of true. But I believe that some deeply ideas, I don't know, maybe. But for me, yeah, it's kind of like you prison in your own body with your own... I don't know how to say it.
Well, you know, the Beauty and the Beast, Howard Ashman felt like the beast was a metaphor for HIV and AIDS. And that, like, gay men had been cursed, much like the beast, to live, to not be able to feel or experience love because of their own vanity. Mm-hmm. And so the Beauty and the Beast was an allegory at the time it was written for HIV and AIDS.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And the Gaston was just because an allegory for hot men. and in your relationship with your husband, Bob, who's the beauty? Who's the beast?
Oh, it's depends from situations. We changing.
Are you the beast ever?
No.
No, you're the beauty.
Sometimes.
Does he get mad at you? He's like...
Sometimes I get mad. Sometimes he get mad. I think it's a life. Everybody have this madness moment, like weakness moment. And then we just come back and like, oh, love you. That's sorry. That was just a moment. Like, I just...
What do you guys argue about mostly?
Argue. I cannot tell you right now because it's not in my memory. Because last probably 2 weeks we have.
He's like, Artem, you have to memorize these damn songs for the show.
I wish you could tell me that.
Damn it, Artem.
I wish you could tell me. No, we argue because not even argue. I'm really a slow person and I'm doing everything slow. I'm cleaning apartment slow. I'm preparing myself slow. And he's very organized and very like. Okay, we're doing this. So he very planning stuff. And I'm trying to learn from him right now a lot of things. And I already feel that I'm much better in the planning stuff and memorizing stuff. So we kind of like adding to each other. So I'm a little bit more, you know, flying in the skies with the light emotions and positivity. And he's more organizing, doing this and this and this and this and this. So we... In a good position to add each other.
So you're teaching dancing right now. Are you getting back into competitive ballroom dancing?
That's a good question. Because
that's something you can do pretty much till the day you die, right? I mean, you have performers out there that are much older. Because how old are you right now?
31.
You're 31. I mean, people still dance well until they're how old?
40, 50, 60. Yeah. I know the Russian greatest ballerina who sadly she died. I think 2 years ago, she was 80.
Antonia Antonova?
Smaya Plisetska. Mm. She's was the best of the best. And she go on the stage at 60 and 50, 60, 70s and 80s.
Wow.
And she's just legend. The way how she moved, the way how she expressing her arms, passion, the energy, eyes, projection of these feelings. Mm-hmm. in the body. Like, oh, wow. You can just watch hours.
Of all those dance TV shows that are out there, so you think you can dance, Strictly Ballroom, all that kind of stuff, which is your favorite dance show?
I saw Strictly Come Dancing. Mm-hmm. I saw a little bit of the Dancing with the Stars. I saw So You Sing, You Can Dance. I really love in So You Sing, You Can Dance contemporary style dancing. Mm-hmm. And the choreographers who doing this choreography, like, amazing. It's a lots of freedom. I can say in the ballroom dancing, a little bit more limitations, mm-hmm. what you can do, how you can express, how you need to move your body. And
mm-hmm. yeah, I would want to hold you back.
Contemporary gives you much more freedom, so mm-hmm. you feel like a wow.
Full. You can do anything.
Yeah.
Can you stick a bottle on your head and do one of those Russian dances?
Ah, no.
No.
No, maybe practicing? Yeah, yes. I believe I can do that.
I bet you could.
Well, Artem Lazarev, I really had a little bit of skepticism and doubts about your performance, but I think you really nailed it this time. Congratulations.
Woo! Yeah!
You made it past the round!
Thank you,
is that
guys.
A 10? Did you give him a 10?
I think they don't give the numbers. They just say you pass or fail.
No, I think they give you like a 10. I think they give you a 10 and stuff like
or
that.
Or 5 out of, yeah, 3 out yeah. of 5 stars.
Oh, you mean like it's a, like a
yeah,
ranking?
They rank
yeah.
you.
Oh, okay. They give you like 10s and stuff when they're dancing?
Oh, we have usually like a places from 1st to 6th.
Okay.
Or you're 1st or you're yeah. 1st or the last.
Right. But each judge gives you a rank, like
yeah.
On a scale of 1 to 10, right?
Yeah, and sometimes it's crazy because you could be good, but sometimes judges don't like you. It's just like their vision, and some people start first place, and some people 6, and like 1st, 6, 2nd, 1st, 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 6, and like what?
You're like Nigel, please. Nigel Lithgow is the head judge on.
It's not Lithgow, that's somebody else.
Lithgow, yeah.
Is it? Is that?
Yeah.
Him?
So
okay,
you think you can dance? He's
you're
a producer
right.
of American Idol, and he's also the head judge on So You Think You Can Dance. Mia Michaels is the one who goes, "Woo! I wanna fuck you all." She's the very vivacious woman who always likes things. You know, she's
a fun lover.
She's a fun lover. Nigel's has some, you know, you were dancing like a bloated corpse of a dying pig.
Oh my God.
It's a pleasure really to get to know you. And I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your story. You know, you really are a lot of fun, Artem. And I urge all the people who are in Chicago to check his one man show out. Thursday, August 31st at Davenport's Piano Bar.
Thank you, guys.
It's a 2-drink minimum, but you can order like soda or something. Save some money. Bring your little whiskey flask and your jacket.
Yeah, it's really a pleasure to see you guys and just talk to you also. It's really a new experience for me. I never did this before, so it's...
We'll
thank
come
you.
Back another time. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely.
I want to remind folks we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus because your contribution to the show is what makes this show happen. We also have fantastic t-shirts for sale in our store at feastoffun.com/store. Every purchase of a t-shirt or mug or a tote bag goes to create this programming.
We even have aprons.
And aprons.
There's a photo of Mark not wearing anything except an apron.
Mm.
You can check out that photo at our store, feastoffun.com/store.
There is actually, I think, in Europe, there is a restaurant and the people, there is only guys who serve the tables and they're absolutely naked and in aprons. So technically, when they turn around and you see their butt.
Oh.
It's called,
I don't know
how to
swear exactly, but I see the picture and they're like, and they're serving in the restaurant, like, interesting.
Not in front of my salad.
Yeah. You're like, I'd like to toss that salad. Where? Oh, so butt restaurant, apron.
I like this
Europe.
Restaurant. You know, in New York City, there's a pop-up restaurant that serves chicken-crusted Cheetos, or like food made with Cheetos. It's supposed to be brand marketing and stuff. Because it's like people just don't want to go eat at normal places anymore or anything that seems, you know, like a restaurant with food. So all these hipsters are like, oh, let's go to the new, you know, Oreo cookie dessert bar or the Cheeto restaurant in New York City. And even Applebee's, who was trying to, like, market themselves to the hip, you know, young millennial generation, is like, ah, fuck it. Would you like a blooming onion with that? That's pretty much it.
I know in Russia they have an interesting restaurant. I've never been there.
Is there an Applebee's in Russia?
I'm not sure. I remember it in New York, I remember, yeah.
But it's there potato is, bees.
Something probably like this, yeah. They have a restaurant, turnip. Like, absolutely dark, so yeah. You come in, and like a blind people, they just bringing you, so you're standing in the row, and you're eating, you don't know actually what you're eating, like, you just, like, taste
it. That's terrifying.
It. You cannot see. You order some food, you know what you order, but when they're bringing you, you don't see what type of food, and you're just like eating, and you're just like, oh,
they go, close your eyes, open your mouth, and you'll receive a big surprise.
It's a perfect Russian accent.
Thank
I
you.
Love that.
You do. We have ways of making you pleasure.
I start thinking maybe you're a Russian spy.
I may be. I am part of the KGB, the cock balls and grab them.
Okay.
Thank you, Artem.
Thank you, guys, so
Bye-bye.
Much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.